States against Rhodes.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brian Mullins, and I represent appellant Bruce Rhodes on this appeal of the district court's decision to impose as a condition of supervised release that Mr. Rhodes submit himself to plethysmograph testing if directed by the probation office. And essentially, we are asking the court to adopt the holding of the Ninth Circuit in the Weber case, which we've cited in the brief and is at 451 F3rd 552, which essentially imposes a heightened or enhanced procedural requirements for a plethysmograph testing because that court found plethysmograph testing to be particularly intrusive on a defendant's liberty interest.
Before I doubt that for a minute, Mr. Mullins, but the Sixth Circuit in the Lee case took the position that if the testing itself wasn't going to take place before a very long period of time, in Mr. Rhodes' case, he's got a 10-year sentence, and so then sometime thereafter, the claim really isn't ripe in that we don't even know whether the many persuasive arguments you have raised in your brief about whether this is a reliable method of ascertaining whether a sex offender has been cured or not, maybe we'll know a lot more in another 10 years. And so why wouldn't it be enough to say, let's reach this if and when the time comes, and perhaps even go a step beyond what the Sixth Circuit said and make it clear that a person in Mr. Rhodes' position would have an opportunity to challenge that test before it was required of him?
Well, I was going to say that before I address the merits of the claim, I did want to address the ripeness of the issue. And I think,
I mean, we have a conflict in the circuits at this point, or at least two different approaches in the circuits.
Right.
Maybe it's not fully conflicting.
And we do have that language in the Schoenborn case that yeah. Judge Kaney wrote about waiting until it's ripe or concrete, a real dispute.
I understand. I think this court's decisions, though, are more closely aligned to the Ninth Circuit than to the Sixth Circuit. For example, the Ross case, which involved sex offender treatment as a condition of release, the court did not. The court decided that issue on the merits and did not believe that it was not ripe for appeal. I think a lot of issues regarding supervised release rely on contingencies.
Yes, but in that case, it was ordered that he undergo that. Here we're talking about where he has to be evaluated and participate in a program if recommended, and then with the program may include this type of testing. There are a lot of contingencies here that weren't present there.
There is an additional contingency here, but I think you often see contingencies in any condition of supervised release. A defendant is required to do alcohol treatment if directed by the probation office, drug treatment if directed by the probation office, mental health treatment if directed by the probation office.
Of course, I think that gets us into, at the very front end of a sentence, evaluating all of these things that aren't going to come into play for years down the road and are not certain by any means. We get enough criminal appeals as it is.
Enough on your plate. I understand, but I think it's just, this is a fairly typical appeal of a supervised release condition. Perhaps if the court believes that supervised release conditions as a whole are not ripe until a violation occurs or until a person is released, that might be a direction the court wants to go. But I think if the court is consistent with its prior holdings addressing supervised release, this case is really no different than the condition of alcohol treatment, mental health treatment, drug treatment that has been addressed pretty routinely.
It's a little different. The rest of them don't give me the willies. This one gave me the willies.
I understand. And I think the Ninth Circuit went into considerable amount of detail that does give one the willies.
There are supervised release conditions, and then there are others. And I think the point Judge Tinder's making is an important one, which is, I mean, I recall a case where somebody was told, you just can't have a computer. And that's, first of all, a very clear command. Secondly, you know, arguably quite overbroad. This is, you know, if somebody thinks you need this kind of test, it's just permission. And we just don't know so much. I mean, there's some serious scientific questions that the competing literature on this testing seems to be raising that this court is a very poor body to resolve. And I'm not really even sure, in light of your own brief, what you think Judge Crabb needs to decide that she hasn't already decided about Mr. Rhodes. I mean, you're trying to make this procedural, and I appreciate the effort, but you want her to say why this kind of testing would be correct for Mr. Rhodes in particular as opposed to just generically, but she said a lot about Mr. Rhodes in particular.
But also why this particular testing would be more useful than other less intrusive tests. Such as a polygraph. There is something called an ABLE test, which is where a person is asked to look at photos and they measure how long the person looks at the photos. There's a card sorting test where a person looks at cards and is asked to say whether they find the depictions sexually arousing, and self-reporting. And these are all less intrusive means, and that's what we're asking the court to find, which is what the Ninth Circuit is requiring.
But here I want to go back to the fact that you've conceded that we're on plain error review. Now, if Mr. Rhodes at the sentencing hearing had said, look, there are a lot of other ways that the medical community, I'll call it broadly, the treatment community, can go about testing and evaluating these measures, and I think you should use these other things, the district court could create a record. You might get experts who might testify. You might be able to make a sensible decision. That wasn't said. Instead, what was said was Fifth Amendment arguments and maybe just a little bit of an objection register. But I think you've rightly agreed that this wasn't really developed. And so this case seems like a bad vehicle to take the approach that you're suggesting.
I'll be candid. I think this court could decide the case against us on plain air. I don't think that would be an unreasonable application of the plain air rule. However, I think plain air is an equitable doctrine, essentially, where you can find that a side is correct on the law, but still the case shouldn't be remanded. And I think given that we did raise an objection to the condition, even though it was on a different ground, I think it is not unreasonable to not apply plain error. And I think if this court finds that the Ninth Circuit...
Even if we find against you on this, you could go back tomorrow and seek a modification of that condition of supervised release, couldn't you?
We could.
And make whatever record you felt you needed to make at that point.
Correct. I think what we're asking the court to do, what we are asking the court to do, is if the court agrees with the Ninth Circuit, I don't think it would be unreasonable, given that we did object to the imposition of the condition, to adopt the Ninth Circuit's reasoning in this case and now require district courts in this district to do this heightened procedural requirement for...
But he might even be better off if we approached it the way the Sixth Circuit is talking about, because the science might get better sometime over the next, 9 years or so while he finishes serving his prison terms.
Correct.
I mean, we don't know.
We don't. I agree with that. I will reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Altman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the government in this case. The Court has essentially made the majority of my arguments and its questions. I was going to bring up the Lee case.
Friendly court we are.
Sometimes, yes. I have been here days when it's been not quite so friendly. But I was going to quote the Lee case, say that Mr. Rhodes is not going to be out for 10 years. Who knows what's going to happen in that time? I was also going to bring up the Schoenborn case and talk about all the contingencies that have to happen before this might be applied. And at least four things have to happen. That's covered in my brief. And the Schoenborn case specifically says that this court doesn't deal with hypotheticals, and that's what we have in this case at this time.
But is the government actually arguing that people really can never raise on appeal, in a direct criminal appeal, the question whether a specific condition of supervised release was inappropriate? And if that's not your argument, then when can you raise it and when not?
That is not my argument. I think that you said something about a condition that you can never look at the Internet or you can never go to a casino. That's a finite factor. That's something that is going to happen or is imposed specifically, and of course that could be appealed or raised on direct appeal at the time after sentencing. This has so many things that have to happen before it would be imposed. There has to be a sex offender evaluation. There has to be a recommendation that this type of testing occur.
Now, would you agree that if such a recommendation were made, that a person in the position of Mr. Rhodes would have the would have an opportunity to go to court before it was confrontational, if you will, and get an evaluation whether that was an appropriate way to go? I mean, what I'm worried about is, sure, he could refuse to cooperate, but that puts him in a very awkward position before the court. He comes in as contumacious. He comes in as, you know, with some kind of shadow before him. And I'm wondering whether this is the kind of thing that some advance ruling from the court, once the recommendation is made, is an appropriate manner of proceeding.
I don't think so. I think that we need to rely on the people who are making the recommendations. I don't do sex offender evaluations. I don't think anyone in the room does sex offender evaluations. And they're the people that are in the best position to decide what a person needs to undergo to best protect the community and to best satisfy their treatment and achieve their treatment. I think
what if they're relying on outdated science, though? I mean, there was a time people thought polygraph tests were the gold standard, and over the years there's been a great deal of literature suggesting that they really aren't, and the same kind of process might be happening with this sort of testing.
But regardless of that, in sex offender treatment, polygraphs are still routinely used.
Absolutely.
And thought of well by those who are expert at sex offender treatment.
Absolutely.
Even though they wouldn't be admissible in court or otherwise.
I would think that the courts would have to deal that the people that they're working with know what the best options and the best treatments are. If this were to be decided now that this ruling has to be made, we just don't know what they're going to recommend in 10 years. We don't know what the science is going to be in 10 years. In 10 years, the people who are doing the treatment, theoretically, we hope, are using the best treatments and options out there, and that if they make a condition that it is the best, they know that better than anybody else.
And could probation seek a modification of this condition, I guess through your office, say 8.5 years from now when he comes out, to introduce some different requirement that's better science at that time?
Absolutely. If right before he gets out, there's some new test that they think is better than this testing, or the polygraph has been eliminated from that factor, probation could request any sort of change in the conditions and address the new testing. Even before he gets out, without it having to get confrontational.
And the counter to that is he could too, couldn't
Absolutely.
He
could say, well, I've been in prison. I've learned about my treatment in prison has involved this type of treatment. I think it's helpful to me. I want this specific treatment to be ordered in addition to or in lieu of, and here's why it's better. I just think that right now at this point in time, we're too early to deal with this issue. Unless the court has any specific questions on the merits, I'll rest on my brief on the merits of why this is appropriate for him. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Mullins? How much time does he have? Okay.
I have a brief comment. I understand the court has to decide the case in controversy before it, but I would ask the court to consider the broader implications. If the court is in agreement with the Ninth Circuit on this issue, which I think was a very well-reasoned decision, I think the court has the issue before it today. I don't believe this issue has been brought before this court very often, at least my research doesn't indicate so. And I would ask the court to decide the issue on the merits and decide and to adopt the Ninth Circuit's reason.
We don't often follow the Ninth Circuit. I just give you that.
I understand it's held in some disregard by some, but I thought this was a particularly well-reasoned opinion.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mullins. Thank you, Ms. Altman. We will take the case under advisement.